Trustee Robert Boy.
Here.
Trustee John Butler. Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Trustee Raquel Chavez. Board Chair Mark Strauss.
Here.
Committee Chair Sherilyn Muir.
Here. Thank you. Mr. Blakemore, would you please confirm that appropriate notices of this meeting have been provided?
Madam Chair, appropriate notice pursuant to the Open Meetings Act have been made, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the committee agenda as proposed?
So moved.
Second? Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The motion is approved. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the August 27th, 2015 LARI committee meeting?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is approved. I want to welcome any university advisory committee representatives present this morning. Deborah, I see you there. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well. Dr. Dan Gebo is... Oh, you're over there. Do you want to sit over there?
Greg is going to sit there.
All right. Do you have any comments either of you would like to make?
Of course, I always have
a
comment.
Of course,
we
always enjoy your comments, Deborah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I want to talk about a recent rally that the presidents of the three councils, with the assistance of Michael Mann, and the huge and very effective work by our student association, real shout out to Dylan Domke, but all of the students really rallied with us planners to have a very successful rally about state funding impasse, MAP grants, funding for universities, community agencies, social services, the elderly. It was a wonderful rally. We had always, through the couple of hours of our rally, at least 500 people, and that's some people came, left, others replaced them. So it was successful. All of the councils are doing letter writing campaigns about the budget impasse and the impact on universities, and we applaud President Baker's comments that we've heard quoted on the news about all of the efforts that we're all making collectively to try and do something about the impasse and keep funding for universities, which are such a driver of local economies and the state economy, and research projects. So it ties into all of these things. So I appreciate everyone's work on that, and keep up the letter writing campaigns. A second thing I would like to say, with Lisa's permission, is I have submitted my resignation, so December will be my last meeting with the board. I will be retiring January 1st. So thank you for all of your work and your comradeship.
A surprise and a loss for this university.
Thank you.
Certainly on behalf of this committee, I want to thank you for your service. And I have always appreciated whichever committee I happen to chair, I could always count on you for not only comments, but very thoughtful comments.
Thank you.
And so we certainly wish you well. I know that you'll come back to NIU and visit. Maybe in the spring, not in January, though, huh?
Oh, no. January, I start working on finishing my dissertation, so I'll be a student.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
in what area?
I am getting my doctorate in adult and higher ed with a counseling component, and my research is on faculty careers and retirement.
Excellent.
I know a little bit about that.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
You're
Deborah.
Welcome.
Dan, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
I do not.
All right. Thank you. Well, Deborah's retirement was a surprise this morning, and as chair of this committee, I have the latitude to recognize individuals, and so we recognize you this morning. But also I wanted to take this opportunity to recognize an individual who has contributed so much to this university, and she too will be retiring at the end of December. Dr. Nancy Castle has had an illustrious career here at Northern Illinois University. And she has provided service not only to the university, but a tremendous dedication to the students of NIU. Her husband is here to honor her as well, John Castle, who, as many of you know, has also spent his entire life dedicated to this community. Nancy is a three-time NIU alum, which I don't know if you all knew that, but it's like once she found something good, she decided to stick with it. So she received her bachelor's degree, her master's degree, and her PhD in psychology from NIU. Nancy has made numerous and lasting contributions to research and innovation. In 1990, Nancy collaborated on a $3.5 million grant to fund a research and training center on the needs of people who were deaf and lower functioning. Continuing her work to improve the lives of disabled individuals, in 1999, Nancy co-authored a grant for the Presidential Commission on Persons with Disabilities to help faculty and staff work effectively with disabled students. Nancy has truly devoted her career to dealing with the needs of those who are disabled. She has received many recognitions for her work in her field. She served as president of the National Association of Rehabilitation Research and Training Centers, and she was awarded the prestigious Jean Peterson Award. Over the years, Nancy has made an impact on multiple programs. One extremely significant area is when she took upon herself the leadership of the Honors Program, which resulted in tremendous growth in the program. Nancy showed great initiative and dedication to the Honors Program, and hosted often at their home, John and Nancy often hosted at their home, students, and also included them in many activities. Most recently, Nancy has played a leading role in the success of the Center for Non-Governmental Organization Leadership and Development, which is better known as NGOLD. She was instrumental, in development of the program and has served as its director since March of 2013. I'm not crying. I just have a cold. But I could, because it's such a loss to NIU to see Nancy leave. Nancy has been an unqualified success for our faculty and students. Even while leading NGOLD, Nancy has continued her work in research and innovation, most recently comparing the provision of disability services in the U.S. and the EU and the role of NGOs in advocacy and service delivery. As part of this work, she has formed a partnership serving a disadvantaged neighborhood in Paris with a goal to encourage people to aspire to college and success. She will be working with this program, which received UNESCO funding, into her retirement. Nancy, I'd like to invite you to the podium to make a few comments. I want you to know that our hearts will always be with you, and I know that NIU will always remain in your heart.
Well, thank you. And thank you for taking advantage of your ability to take advantage of everybody's time. Thank you all. I just would like to say that I have, in reflecting and having to send information about things I've done, I've never really thought of myself as innovative. But it turns out I really have been. And the innovation to me really hasn't been about being innovative. It's been about being like practical and realistic and smart. And so opportunities have presented themselves that I think only would have presented themselves at a place like NIU. And so working with people with disabilities, the grant that we got for the Research and Training Center, actually, they hired me. I was at the University of Arkansas. I got hired to come up and write the grant, and it was such an interesting prospect that when they got the grant, I, of course, applied for a job so I could come up and work on it. And really, that kind of set the stage for a lot of what happened at Northern. But the thing that was really cool about it is that the department that this grant, this funding center was in, was the Department of Speech-Language Pathology. Okay, so we had a deafness rehabilitation program in Speech Path, and that's because in the 70s, when this department split from Speech Communications, they said, you know, if we're going to have Speech Path and Audiology, we shouldn't look at deaf people like just an ear or how can we help them learn to talk. We should do something that involves the whole deaf person. So they had a deafness program already here, fairly innovative, classic NIU. the Center for NGO Leadership and Development. We have so many students that leave NIU and end up in the world of nonprofits or international NGOs who knew nothing about how they worked that, I mean, this innovation, again, classic NIU, perfect. So I've just been really lucky to be able to be a part of a university that actually sets the stage for a lot of innovation. And so I think for everybody, and there are a lot of faculty out there and staff on campus that are very creative, that don't think of themselves as creative, but they're really very innovative. And so please keep the doors open for those people. Please, with the prioritization and so on, be sure that that's the kind of thinking that gets forwarded, because that's really what makes a difference for NIU students. So thank you. And I, just in fairness, I will be working with this project in Paris in retirement. I'm just thankful it was in Paris and not like some war-torn place that I would have a hard time visiting. So, but I am in a very rough section of Paris, just so you know.
Yeah,
so.
Right, Nancy.
Yeah, it is. It is. I have to get an escort from the metro.
Yeah. You know, so. I would like Deborah and Nancy to, would you please stand so that we can applaud both of you and your successes. Thank you. Thank you. Of course. Excuse me.
I just want to wish both ladies a very happy retirement. And I've known Nancy and John Castle for a lot more years than all three of us want to admit. But I have very fond memories, Nancy, of the way you were, the way you are today. And you've been a great, great asset to the university. And thank you, John, for being here today. It's wonderful to see all three of you, Deborah, you included, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. This is the point in our agenda where we recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustee bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Blakemore, have you received any timely request to address this meeting?
Madam Chair, we have received one request from Mr. Derek Van Buur.
Is he here? Yes. Is it 5 minutes?
We do. I think it's five. Yes.
Okay.
Morning.
Thank you.
A few months ago, I talked about the legal bills that were being incurred by President Baker's OEIG investigation, and there was some confusion about how much they were. So I want to go through them because I got additional information. First of all, most of you already have the stuff. Tim Struthers probably doesn't, or the student trustee, but they can get it probably from Mr. Blakemore. But it was a memorandum from John Butler about it, and there are some fill-in-the-blanks. One of the first fill-in-the-blank is how much the manager partner, Raymond Cotton, is charging, and I believe it's $685 an hour. I've solved that through a series of linear equations, i.e. invoices, but I was told it was a trade secret. And Public Assets Counselor out of the Attorney General's office is reviewing it now as we speak, but I provided him with all the rates. The letter goes on to say that the board's not going to pay more than blank. I would assume the blank is $450 an hour because that's the blended rate for drinker brittle, but I'm not sure. But I've also requested that from the public access counselor. And then it goes on to say that President Baker needs to pay out of his personal funds any amount exceeding that rate. So at that rate, he owes roughly $20,000. I don't know if he's paid because I haven't got the documentation yet. And it could be less if the rate was higher. The other thing I want to point out is that the letter talks about the broad nature of the investigation. The Agra County Watchdogs published an article recently that showed that there was a charge for printing out the documents on the disk from the OEIG. The cost was over $5,500. That equates to 36,730 pages. So it is a very broad investigation. How much does it cost? Invoices through June total approximately $129,000 for the two law firms, because there's one law firm that is for the Board of Trustees at Pierce, which is Drinker, And then there's one law firm that's being paid by the university for President Baker, which is Minx. September and July and August, Minx charged another $17,000. Drinker charged another $8,700 in July. But as you can see, it's a fairly expensive investigation. When I talked last time, we were talking about how much had been approved by the board on POs. Well, the only POs that have been approved by the board are for Minx. And that appeal is now up to $225,000. Again, fairly substantial amount of money. The appeal for Drinker sits now at $91,000. So $316,000 is being spent on this investigation that pretty much none of you know about. And it should be. Every county watchdog has been publishing. I've requested the what I call the Blakemore report. It's a very interesting report, but I haven't seen it. I see a lot of hours being charged to it. The only people that can release it is the board because attorney-client privilege. I asked, how do I get something on the agenda for the board to act on it? And I was told I couldn't. The only people that can put stuff on the agenda is the board chairman of each of the committees. So none of the regular board of trustees can actually suggest an agenda item, unless it goes to the board. I think for open and transparency, that report should be released. We should understand the risk that is involved with this investigation, how much it's going to cost, because, as you know, budget is very tight, money is very tight. You just had to spend another $300,000 on the Stevens for winter maintenance. And also, don't forget, the last time I talked about the letter from Representative Dwight Kay about what is the legal impact of the indemnity contract agreement that was entered on by President Baker for former interim CFO Nancy Sutterfield. There's probably a whole bunch of legal bills associated to that, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your concern and interest in our university. Our agenda today includes reports on state relations and a budget update. I suppose it's not happy news, right?
Put a happy face on it.
Okay. And our continued focus on research programs and an in-depth look into research collaborations with federal laboratories and research concentrations. That is very exciting for us. First on our agenda is Mike Mann, who will present our state legislative update. Mike?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Earlier this week, the House and Senate were in session, and there was some progress made on some peripheral issues. But the basic fact of the matter is that we are in day 135 of the fiscal year, and the state is still without a comprehensive state budget. About 90% of the state budget is in progress, and higher education remains one of the few remaining areas that is operating with that has not received a spending plan from the state. I would like to let the committee know about some of the things that have taken place that President Baker and I and others have been involved in since the committee last met, and I will do so right now. On October 20th, President Baker and the public university president and his public university presidential colleagues went to Springfield to meet with the legislative leaders to talk about the need for MAP funding and for university operating capital funding. President Baker met with and the group met with Senate President Cullerton, Senate Republican Leader Redonio, House Republican Leader Durkin, and House Majority Leader Curry. Then on October 22nd, President Baker and a team of one university president and four community college presidents sat down to discuss the needs of the universities with Governor Rauner and his chief operating officer, Linda Lingle. I would say in both of those meetings, the meetings were cordial enough. There was some indication that there was some expectation that there might be some budget movement in January. At which time where a supermajority is not needed to pass things in the House or Senate. As Deb alluded to earlier, on October 29th, the NIU Student Association sponsored a rally that was held here at MLK Commons. Hats off to Dylan Domke for pulling the rally together. We had a good turnout for a cold, blustery day. The rally was attended by NIU students as well as students from Chicago State University, Governor State University, and several local community colleges. Later that evening, the governor was on campus to speak to the DeKalb County Economic Development Corporation. As I mentioned, Tuesday, the House and Senate were in session. One of the positive outcomes that occurred was that the House adopted House Amendment 1 to House Bill 4156. This bill would provide NIU with $85.2 million. It is the same amount, it is the same appropriation level that was approved by the General Assembly in the spring. It represents a 6.5% cut from our revised FY15 appropriation. That bill is now on third reading in the House. Unfortunately, the House is not scheduled to meet again until December 2nd, and the Senate currently is not scheduled to meet this calendar year. So we really still are looking at 2016, the calendar year, as hope for the fiscal 16 budget development. The legislature and the governor did agree to, there was some progress made on some other, I will call them peripheral issues. The State Museum will remain open. There was some progress made on administrative rules as they relate to assistance for child care and daycare. Currently, the governor is scheduled to meet with legislative leaders on November 18th for what appears to be a public session, a public discussion of the state budget issues. And then again on December 2nd, the House is scheduled to be in session to, I would assume, to hopefully take up this House Bill 4156. I'm sure they would like to get that bill passed and pass it on to the Senate. And with that, I'd like to turn it over for questions or ask Dr. Breger if he's got any comments to make.
You know, one thing I'd like you to make a comment on, Mike. We sit here in a room like this. Other universities sit in a similar room. It's my understanding we have two issues going on. One, the students are not receiving their MAP funding. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then we're not receiving our appropriation. So we're having it from two ways.
Correct.
Where is the sense of furor and alarm? And where is the strength of that voice? I know the presidents have echoed that. But mm-hmm. When you're in Springfield, it almost seems as if we're reporting these things as opposed to understanding that the viability of our state universities, all state universities, is quite precarious at this time. Are you sensing that?
Well, absolutely. The House convened a committee of the whole Tuesday. It was scheduled to begin at 3 o'clock. It ended up starting around 5:30 or 6 o'clock. By then, the excitement of the day had passed. There were two very controversial votes on child care and services for elder care and disabled people with disabilities. Both votes failed by one vote. They required 71 votes and received only 70. There was a lot of tension on the floor, to say the least. So after that excitement of the day, the Committee of the Whole convened, and the president from U of I, the president from Chicago State, and the president from Western were asked to address the House and talk about the issues that you just mentioned, the predicament that we're in, the long-term damage that's occurring, the anxiety that this is creating for students. And the presidents delivered their remarks to the House. They were then peppered with questions about truth and tuition, the 60 by 25 goal, and why aren't they increasing enrollment. they were asked if they preferred the governor's approach over the legislature's approach. It was they received many partisan type questions, put them in at times in an awkward situation. So yes, we're having conversations. Presidents are meeting regularly. We are communicating. We are met most times with shoulder shrugs or yes, we support you. It's just out of our hands. So we are not giving up. Several boards of trustees have actually passed resolutions urging the legislature to do their jobs and pass a state budget.
What universities have done that?
I know Northeastern has done it. I believe ISU has done it. U of I has either done it or is in the process of doing it. So a good number have passed resolutions.
Okay. Comments?
My understanding, University of Illinois, their intentions is to pass a resolution this morning in their Board of Trustee meeting, requesting that the leadership in Springfield find a way to pass a budget and provide adequate funding for their university. And, you know, in light of that, I like to put a directive out on the table for, you know, for us to prepare a resolution to do something very similar to show our support and concerns about what's taking place in Springfield to a point where we could let everyone know that the impact that this impasse is having on our students, our institution, our faculty members, administrators, and the greater community. And we've got to find a way to say, how do we get past this, or how do we get this, get some funding for our state institution and show that we're really concerned just the same. And so I know we can't take a formal vote or propose a formal resolution today, but however, I would like to put a directive on the table and have our general counsel prepare a resolution that we can take up in a meeting or as soon as possible to also show our concerns in this matter.
I'd be happy to work with President Baker and Jerry to put together an item for the December meeting for the board to consider.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent idea. Other questions, Mark?
Just a comment. I believe that Trustee Coleman is on course with asking that we consider what to do. The issue of whether the state should fund higher education is not a partisan issue. And my hope is that whatever the work product that's produced is will not make this a partisan issue either. But it will cite to the very serious considerations that Trustee Coleman mentioned, the impact on economic development through the region, the issues of fairness to students that are going to be asked soon to pay tuition for the second semester, as well as fairness and the ability to plan for our faculty and staff who have other options for employment and have to view the tenuous nature of state financing as a real challenge in their daily existence. So I'm certainly willing to bring this as a matter from the chair if President Baker would prefer to bring it as a matter directly from the president at the full board meeting in December. Either alternative would be acceptable to me.
Bob?
Just a thought on the term leadership. I agree totally. But for the future, I'm assuming that the request would go to both the executive and legislative branches of our government.
My first of all, there's a leadership team in Springfield that needs to come to some kind of resolution, conclusion. I think it should go to all the leaders in both branches. Correct.
you know, certainly I think that a resolution is obviously most appropriate. But I'm reaching a point, and I'll reiterate my question more as a comment. There needs to be a time when we're less orderly and polite and sitting back in our leather chairs and writing resolutions, which is the proper thing to do. And I agree with Trustee Coleman on this, and I don't mean to make light of that. But I am getting concerned that we are procedural. And our presidents go down to Springfield. We write resolutions. We make these comments. I certainly agree with the Chair Strauss that heaven forbid that this is viewed as partisan. I mean, that is the most repulsive thing I could even imagine. It is not a partisan issue. It is it is the universities of this state. And the damage that is happening now, it's going to be a long time coming. And so I'm looking, and I'll direct the question to the president. At some point, when do we make a different when is our demeanor different than our suits and ties and resolutions to gather attention that this, if we destroy the universities of a state like Illinois, the repercussions are going to be decades long. Decades long. Where's the mayor on this? Where are all the mayors? Not just the mayor of Chicago, but we have our presidents going to Springfield. Where are the mayors of every city saying, you know, you can't destroy the university system of our state? And so what are your thoughts, Doug, on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for asking. Unfortunately, I think higher education right now is a bit of a sideshow and a much bigger play as the legislature and the governor fight over the future landscape of the political dynamics of the state. There are a lot of people being significantly damaged by this. And essentially what the governor told the DeKalb County Economic Development Council when he was here 2 weeks ago was that there's going to have to be more pressure, and it's going to come from some parts of the state closing down or having giant layoffs to create enough energy to change it. He pointed at Chicago and what's likely to happen in December in Chicago with the cash flow situation there and significant layoffs, particularly in the teaching core, closing of the K-12 schools and whatnot. So I think he believes that pressure, along with the time passing into the new legislative session in January, with a full session, there will no longer be required 71 votes. It'll be a simple majority. And so it sounds both sides, when we were in Springfield the last few weeks, both sides have said it'll happen in January when there's no longer a supermajority. We know essentially what has to be done. Both sides kind of know within a fairly narrow band what needs to be done, but they can't get over the hump until more damage is visible to the public and we're in a session with a simple majority requirement. Now, having said that, I will thank also Greg Long, who wasn't recognized earlier, for his comments at the rally that was held out in the MLK Commons, 2 weeks ago. We had over 500 faculty, staff, and students there. We had local service providers. And many of them got up and spoke about the damage being done in our community with people being turned away from homeless shelters or shelters for abused women in the community, which is tragic. As many as 30 a month were noted. These are issues that are just not okay in our society. And so I think those voices were loud. It was well covered. I appreciate the faculty, staff, and students, for particularly the students that organized it, and Greg for his excellent comments. Representative Pritchard was there and spoke as well. We are across the state, alumni are organizing, and I think there's a petition drive going on now. There's, I think we heard yesterday, at least 8,000, soon to be 10,000 names on that petition drive that'll be going to legislators. Our alumni association has on the website a sign-up place for that to occur. So these things are going on, but unfortunately, I don't think higher education is the big lever that's going to move a whole legislature to get a state budget. We've got to do our part. We've got to be noisy. We've got to talk about the damage that's being done. But both sides of the House and Senate, Republican and Democrat, as well as the governor, say they understand higher education. They know its importance to the future, but they've got to get over the larger political question.
So it's unfortunate. We're mitigating the damage inside, and I think we'll see a solution early in the calendar year.
Well, you know, I think NIU has always done a good job in terms of looking at a situation and mitigating the damage. And so I look to the leadership of the president and your cabinet. But two thoughts I had, and then we'll move on. We have 225,000 alumni, do we not, in the Chicago?
About 130 in Chicago, 130,000 in Chicago.
So 225 in our, that's what the billboard said. So, you know, 8,000 is one thing, 225,000 is a lot stronger. And the last thought I had about this, on the front page of the Chicago Tribune yesterday, on the front page, we talked about moving the center of think tanks to the Midwest, to Chicago, and to start to lessen the focus on both coasts on the think tanks, in particular because, excuse me, of the $100 million gift to the University of Chicago, Harris School, and the $1 million gift to Northwestern University by Buffett's sister. That doesn't include the other $100 million that Northwestern got from the Pritzers for their law school. If I were a politician, if I were a mayor, if I were a business person in this arena, I certainly would find this appalling to see on the front page of the Chicago Tribune commendations for $100 million gifts, which is wonderful. Commendations for our private universities to take the national leadership, which is commendable. But there are a lot of people here that need to be educated that cannot go to the University of Chicago and Northwestern University to benefit from those extraordinary philanthropic gifts. We will not have those philanthropic gifts here. We need to be protected by our government, by our state government. So this is an issue that I really wanted to focus on this morning, and I wanted to take some time to focus on it beyond what is ordinary and customary, to say that the anger and the sense of being vehement about this at some point, it needs to happen before we have total catastrophe. And if our leaders are waiting for total catastrophe, it may be around the corner. So. Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you. So, but moving on to something positive in terms of what we are doing here at NIU, and the heart of what we talk about in this committee is the research that we're doing, and some of the highlights of the research and the collaborations with Fermilab are extraordinary. And that puts us in a position of being able to talk about the contributions that this university is making, also on a national, global basis with our relationships with Fermi. So I would like to turn this over to our committee liaison, Jerry Blasey, to talk about, give us some highlights, and to talk about some of the things that are happening.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to the board. Yeah, I'm going to try to improve the mood of this committee meeting with a discussion of some of the great success we're having in the research area. Could we bring up the next presentation, please? It should be a PowerPoint presentation. Okay. So we've, as part of our continuing deep dive or a close look into the research enterprise, I wanted to pivot away from physics in particular towards our research partnerships with local institutions. And as the chair mentioned, that does involve Fermilab, but it's certainly not limited to Fermilab. So I wanted to take a little time to show you the depth of our partnership with the institutions and the importance to our research enterprise. NIU has enjoyed a long tradition of close collaboration with the two nearby national laboratories, and these tend to wax and wane a bit, but they're currently at a very high point. And in fact, they've started to expand a little bit internationally, we're starting to be a stronger collaborator with the Particle Physics Laboratory in Geneva, Switzerland, called CERN. And we've also started to expand our institutional partnerships in a meaningful way with one of the local educational institutions, and that's Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. So we're not standing still with respect to our relationships with institutions. They're continuing to grow. One of the ways you can get a feel for the strength of our collaboration and the importance to our research enterprise is by looking at the numbers, the financial numbers, which describe how much research we do with both Argonne on top and Fermilab on the bottom. There's a lot of information on this slide, so I'll just walk through it a bit. Okay, so up here I've listed the units, the colleges, and the departments that are involved in the research, and you can see with Argonne we have a strong participation from three departments in SEAT, and we have strong participation from three departments in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And the total there for these three fiscal years from both colleges is something like $10 million. And I remind you that over that time, our sponsored research is something around $90 million. So that's a very significant fraction. If you do the same quick analysis for Fermilab, you can see that there's two departments involved. Traditionally, it's been physics, but recently we've started a very nice interdisciplinary program with mechanical engineering. The total over those 3 years is about $7.3 million. There's a little more detail in there, but I think the main takeaway is that two colleges are involved, and it's $17 million over 3 years, which is about 20% of our total research portfolio. So it's very important that we maintain these partnerships and continue to expand upon them. Another cut on the importance, or another way to look at the importance of a relationship with the laboratories, is the number of faculty appointments we enjoy. And with Argonne, we have something like eight or nine joint faculty appointments in physics, computer science, technology, and so forth. At Fermilab, we have four joint appointments. All of them happen to be in beam physics, and I'll speak about that a little bit more later. One of the points to make is that these lead to a great number of opportunities for our students. Not only do we benefit from the prestige of these appointments, but more importantly, our graduate and undergraduate students do as well. So I'll just talk briefly about some of the collaborations. I'm certainly not being exhaustive here, but I did want to give the board a sense of the depth of these collaborations and what it means to our faculty and our students. Here's four main areas of the collaborations with Argonne. Recently, we became involved in a new initiative of Argonne called the Argonne Collaborative Center for Energy Storage Sciences, and one of our faculty members, Professor Schrader, is actually the deputy director of that in a joint appointment, and that is very good for both our reputation and our access to their energy storage programs. Many of our faculty use the advanced photon source for their research. It can be as few as 6 or as many as 10, depending on what experiments are going on at that time. We utilize the Electron Microscopy Center, and we have collaborations with the Material Science, Energy System, and High Energy Physics Division. So we're very well integrated into the Argonne, the laboratory complex. And here's a nice picture of some happy physicists and students setting up their experiment on one of the beam lines at the advanced photon source. Here's some more examples of those collaborations. Over here we have a student that's using some cryogenic equipment, superconducting equipment at the Energy Building Labs. Here are our collaborators from physics that are working at CERN. And we have leveraged very nicely our relationship with Argonne at CERN because we're essentially part of their group, which is doing a certain class of physics and working on specific parts of the detector. And that really strengthens our position in terms of our ability to have an impact. And that's Professor Chakraborty and two of his students and his postdoc standing in front of the user center at Fermilab. This little graphic here kind of telegraphs the idea of this access center for energy storage. And what it really is it's an administrative effort to bring the resources from these various parts of the laboratory, chemistry, physics, engineering, project management, to bear on energy storage problems. And Argonne is trying to be a source of this expertise for people who want to deal with energy storage problems. And as I said, Professor Schrader is the deputy director of that, which is quite important for NIU's profile and our future research. At Fermilab, we're currently involved in two big ways, through the Northern Illinois Center for Accelerator and Detector Design, which is in the College of Arts and Science. Both we're involved through high-energy physics experiments and through accelerator science. In terms of experiments, we're involved in the MU2E collaboration, and that's a $230 million project. We have significant management responsibility, NIU does, and here you can see the hole, which this was last year where they started excavating for the actual detector building. Also involved in a smaller experiment, $40 million G-2 collaboration, which studies some of the properties of muons that could lead to some unexpected and new physics. And that is a giant superconducting magnet. You can see some of our students and faculty down here behind the text. That has now been supercooled, and that experiment will start taking data in the next year or two. So that's experiments. We're also heavily involved in accelerator science, and I'll talk a bit more about that. They have some research programs involving science and technology, high brightness electron sources, and fabrication of certain types of electron sources that we're heavily involved in, and it's bringing a lot of opportunity to our faculty and students. One thing we have done, and I've mentioned this, and I will speak about it a bit more in a general abstract sense in the next talk I give, is that we built a accelerator research concentration of excellence, or what I'm calling an RCE. This is a joint venture with Fermilab to build regional strength in accelerator science. We've entered into a $6 million cooperative research and development agreement, which is called a CRADA. It's a very well-developed instrument that DOE uses to enter into development collaborations. Both institutions are putting something like $3 million into this. It'll eventually lead to 6 NIU accelerator scientists, which arguably is the largest university group in the country. Cornell may say it's a little larger, but they got to argue about whether they're faculty or research staff, whatnot. The other large one is at MIT, and a third one is at Maryland, but I think that we could argue we're certainly the second or largest accelerated university group in the U.S. It's led by Dr. Chapon Chateaupadier, formerly a leading director of the Cockcroft Institute in the UK, and we recently hired Dr. Michael Cyphers, who is a leading accelerator physicist from MSU. The return through external funding for our investment, in my mind, has already been met. We invested $3 million in this effort. Fermilab is matching that more or less, and these two physicists and two of the other physicists on our staff recently got NSF and Homeland Security grants totaling about $3 million themselves. So it's been a great investment, and I think it will continue to be a great investment. That's the laboratories, but we haven't stopped there. We've had a very successful collaborative seed grant program with Rosalind Franklin, and during the first half of this calendar year, the two administrations, and I credit Provost Freeman and President Baker, for setting up the possibility for this collaborative seed grant program. And it's been extremely successful because the expertise and capabilities are complementary. They have deep analytic capabilities. We have graduate students and a broader set of expertise. 5 of 9 proposals were selected by me and my counterpart, VP of Research from Rosalind Franklin, and a total funding of $227K. NIU put in $150K and Rosalind Franklin $77K. 6 investigators from each institution are involved in this research, and the grants are well underway. The research is well underway. And I have to say, it was extremely well received by the faculty. In this time where everything is clamping down and we're entrenching in many, many different ways, this got great reviews, and I'll just mention it's been called a great initiative and critical in developing collaborative research. When we can't compensate people in the traditional ways, we have to be more imaginative and appeal to their interest in doing research, collaborating, teaching, and outreach. And it's relatively inexpensive, and it has had great impact. So expected outcomes, all the grants anticipate publications, and we expect in the next calendar year 2 or 3 submissions to NIH and the National Science Foundation. I think if we get 1 proposal out of this, we have recouped our investment. And here I list the 6 grants. I will just mention the words in red so you get a sense. I think very few in this room can really understand this. Maybe the provost can, but it's chemistry and biology, so beyond me. But the research involves cancer, hearing loss, drug design, cancer, and then the physiology behind inflammation. That's 5? Okay. Thank you. I'm usually pretty good at arithmetic. So final comments. The collaborations with regional institutions have been and remain strong. They're very diverse and cover a lot of disciplines. I'm sure I didn't get everybody's initiative, and I apologize, but I wanted to give the board a sense of the broadness. And we're working to expand and leverage these into the future. So before I go to the next talk, I'd like to invite questions or conversations.
Absolutely. I think one of the things I want to make an overview comment is that the purpose of this committee and as the committee has been designed is to continue to give an in-depth overview of the research that we're doing and not just gloss over the terminology and gloss over that, well, these are the grants that we have. I think it especially at this day and in these circumstances, to remind people that we really excel as a public research institution is critical. And so I think that we will continue in this committee to really focus not just we really don't want to focus only on giving you broad information, but we really want to look at it vertically and really in-depth identification for the board in particular, and for our audiences, that what we're doing at NIU is extraordinary. So any comments or questions from our colleagues? Okay. I want to watch the time. Okay.
Yeah, I see. I went over long. So if we get to the next set of slides. So you only voted 1 up? Oh. So I don't see my talk there. I don't see my talk there, so I'll just wing it here. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to talk about was enhancing NIU's capabilities with research concentrations of excellence. They're called clusters. They're called centers. Yesterday, and listening to some talks, they were called communities of excellence. But the basic idea is to pull together some resources in a concentrated way in an area of strength. And There is a relative strategic imperative, or what I would call in terms of reference from the recent exercise that the President went through to build the strategic imperatives, and I'll just read it. Significant imperative number 6 is significantly grow NIU as a leading research university, building on our existing areas of strength and Chicagoland's place as a world leader in innovation, while continuing to engage students and faculty-driven and student-initiated research and artistry. So I want to unpack that just quickly. The main idea is significantly grow NIU as a leading research institution, but it's building on two things: existing areas of research and leveraging Chicago's world leadership in innovation and research. And second, engage students in research and artistry in a faculty-driven and student-initiated way. So I take that as the requirements of any cluster we're going to go forward on: strength, leveraging the area, and make sure it's faculty and student-driven research. So if you think about a research concentration of excellence from 40,000 feet, what we should be doing is select areas with high potential to improve NIU's reputation, make a concentrated resource investment so that there are sufficient resources to attract personnel, ensure success, and attract external support. And a typical model, although it's not the only model, if you start looking at the academic literature, there's many, is to hire one senior investigator and two or three subsequent junior hires with expertise in that area. Next thing you have to do is leverage investments with partner institutions and then smoothly transition the center to a college or a more natural unit within the university. Initiate these new clusters at a cadence consistent with our resources. That's very carefully worded, but you shouldn't stop at one. You should set up a program of building these clusters or concentrations, and also take a very long view to increase overall capability. You just don't do it instantly. You have to build a concentration over several years, and you have to build numerous concentrations over 5 to 10 years. And this research concentration of excellence is one possible framework to complement and respond to program prioritization. I want to be very clear that I'm not proposing anything outside program prioritization. It's just when that process is complete, we need to have some ways to move forward with what we learn from the prioritization. Okay, so I'm short on time and you can't see my slides. I would have talked about some of the selection criteria and show how our accelerator concentration actually meets a set of reasonable selection criteria, and show that that's actually a good example of how to proceed. So in terms of university partnerships, I think any concentration initiated by RIPS has to be done in consultation with the relevant units. Could be HHS, could be CLAS, or one of our existing centers. But there has to be a real clear understanding when you start building one of these. The concentration has to be housed in a natural unit. And I said earlier that could be a department or an existing center or an institute. And then it needs to naturally transition to that home unit carefully and thoughtfully and carefully managed. Just a few final comments on those research concentrations of excellence. They are very successful in attracting recognition. They do improve recruitment. In essence, although we haven't formally done it, we've already initiated one, and you can see in the previous talk how successful it was. And again, we really need to take the long view on these to make them successful and be part of our research portfolio. So I did have some language. You can get a better sense of what I was trying to say by reviewing the items in your book. So,
thank you.
Questions?
And any questions for Dr. Blasey? Well, I want to thank you for the presentation. I also want to thank you for your pragmatism in your presentation, in that you do talk about return on investment and understand the reality, and it looks like we have a pretty good return we're getting more than what we're spending, and it's turning over pretty quickly. I also want to commend the president and the provost, in particular, and your team, for the relationship with Rosalind Franklin. That's a unique endeavor, and it's, you know, I think it's a nice balance. We talk about Fermilab, we talk about Argonne, and then we talk about our own regional, local institutions of higher education that we collaborate with. So I think that was very good, and I hope we continue to see that. Any other questions or comments at all?
Yeah, I just want to mention, next meeting we will depart from the physical sciences and start taking a look at some of the research in the other areas of the university.
That's good. Well, you know, we started, though, with the humanities, so we really try and look at the university as a whole, and we will continue to focus on that. Thank you. Are there any other matters to come to the attention of this committee today by anyone? No. The next committee meeting is set for February 18th, 2016. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.
I got most of that.